Well, yippee-ki-yay, dear listener, we are gathered here together again to do the Good Trash Genre Cast, where we, the UCO Film Society, gather together in the bowels of Liberal Arts Building, hidden in the English department offices, talk about the movies you will never discuss in the course of taking a film studies class. Introductions come first. My name is Dustin Sells. I am a grad student in the 20th and 21st Century Studies program. To my right, sir, could you please introduce yourself?
You say that word bowels a lot.
We are in the bowels because this is the company. This is the department that gets pooped
on. I don't think
on.
It means what you think it means.
Move on.
But yeah, I am Dalton. I am a sociology major.
To my left, could you introduce yourself without being smarmy?
Who? I am Arthur Gordon, and it's
And further to my left, a first-time guest host. Could you introduce yourself, sir?
I'm Philip Harvey. I'm an English literature major.
Thanks. Glad to have you all here together, and we get to talk about the movie Die Hard, if you haven't guessed already. And before we do that, though, we need to do a little listener feedback. We've gotten some over the course of the last week, so I turn it over to Mr. Dalton Stewart to let us hear about that.
Well, we had some feedback on the Twitter, a couple of new followers, always great to see that. We had at Shane Corner of the K1, somebody writes in every once in a while. He wanted to let us know that he really enjoyed our Memento conversation. It's one of his favorite movies, and told us a good analysis. And I'm assuming that was directed at me in particular, so yay.
Of course you are.
Yes. Well, that's kind of how I operate.
Whatever feeds the monster.
I also asked our listeners...
The monster is my soul.
I asked our listeners what were some films they had watched this weekend. What'd they see? What'd they like? Nick underscore Sanford, filmmaker in front of the show, said that he watched the first half of Dog Day Afternoon and the Netflix pulled it.
Oh, so that's all.
Yeah, everybody gets to the good stuff.
Stinking Netflix.
Yep. But that's all we've got for this week, other than some quotes concerning the Big Lebowski. But other than that, that's all we have in the way of feedback on the Twitter.
Excellent, Lester. Be sure to be attentive and endure the entirety of the show so that you get the opportunity to hear those social media means by which you can converse with us and keep the conversation going.
We Shanghai you into listening to the whole thing so you can know where to direct your angry letters.
It is the bait switch.
And you don't even get booze or anything in return.
It's terrible. So, dear listener, please stay attentive for all of that. We move on now to go ahead and discuss our movie for the day, which is Die Hard. But before we can do that, we need a synopsis. That way folks know what's going on. And so the voice of the cinema, Mr. Arthur Gordon, could you please dazzle us with a synopsis?
John McClane, officer of the NYPD, tries to save wife Holly Gennaro and several others, taken hostage by German terrorist Hans Gruber during a Christmas party at the Nakatomi Plaza in Los Angeles.
Thank you so much.
God bless you.
So we begin with our quick thumbs up, thumbs down. Do we like the movie? Do we not like the movie? What works? What doesn't work? I begin to my left, Mr. Arthur Gordon. What do you say?
Arthur Gordon. I'm going to say 1.5 to 2 thumbs up. I actually really enjoyed this movie. A couple reasons.
Like a partially amputated thumb up?
Mr. Rickman, yes.
Going somewhere, Mr. McClane.
That's a terrible Alan Rickman. I'm sorry.
Turn to page
390. It's just so funny. Alan Rickman just turns up in the strangest places.
And this is his first feature presentation film, I believe.
Is it really? That surprised me.
So
he looks naturally greasy.
And he doesn't look like he's aged a day between this and Snake, which is kind of ironic because Bruce Willis has aged quite a bit between this and... And now
it's the lack of hair.
Is it?
He's aging like a fine wine.
No,
I love Bruce Willis so much.
I thought this the movie kind of seemed a little bit satirical and absurdist, and I kind of enjoyed that aspect of it. I thought some of the performance got a little too over the top, and that was my only real downfall. Specifically from the chief and some of the newscasts, I thought it got a little out of hand at times.
That is
the
totally
chief.
Fair.
You mean the principal of Breakfast Club High?
Yeah, potentially. I don't know.
No, it's him.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Mr. Philip Harvey, what do you think about the movie?
I've loved Die Hard since I was little, so it's 2 thumbs straight up. However, I do have a couple of things to say. I didn't like how... what is it? I didn't like how the newscaster was portrayed, mostly, because he seemed... I know it was trying to satirize how newscasters just go after disaster, but he seemed almost really too bloodthirsty. And maybe I'm just... That's just me.
They took a different... I thought when that kind of started, I thought it was going to be a more sincere kind of story with him. And then he just becomes this douchebag. by the end of the film, and I want, you know, I want to see him die. Yeah,
power grabbing.
I don't want to see him slapped. I want to see him dead.
Wow. Well, you got to see Ellis die.
There was that. Yes. So what else did you like about the movie, Dalton, besides the death of an innocent person?
Ellis is a terrible person.
Wait, he died off screen, didn't he?
Ellis is a coke-addicted capitalist who cared about no one but himself. And that's what happens when you're a bad person.
You get shot.
Snape Cerberus shoots you in the face.
Snape Cerberus?
Snape Cerberus. Said it backwards. I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan. I like it okay. Don't give me that.
We're going to get murdered by the people listening
comment,
to the podcast.
Dear listener. Comment. Proceed, sir.
Don't get over it.
The nerds will rise again.
We could talk about that for a day and a half.
We should do Revenge of the Nerds.
Other than Dear Ellis dying. I love this film so, so very much. When I talk about action films, I always point to this as the pinnacle of an action film. It is just sincere enough while just being tongue-in-cheek enough. It's got great performances from the lead cast. It's got a great sense of humor about itself. It's got really, you know, well-choreographed action, both in terms of the camera itself and what is happening actually, you know, in the view of the camera. I just love this movie so very much. Bruce Willis's performance in this film is timeless, obviously, because we're still cranking out sequels, which will probably come up later, but it's just a fun movie, and in terms of late 80s, the 80s were not a good time for film, and in terms of the late 80s, it doesn't get much better than Die Hard.
Excellent, excellent. So, how do I approach How Severus Snape Stole Christmas? the main thing I would bring to any conversation is that absolutely as far as style and as craft and just competence, this film is perfect. There's nothing wrong. There's not a missed beat. The only place, and I say perfect, and that's probably a little extreme because Arthur does bring up a good point. Some of the interactions between Steve Urkel's neighbor and the mayor
from, yeah, right.
Carl Winslow.
and the principal from the Breakfast Club are forced. There's a scene in which Mr. Willis makes his way into a air duct, which would not have happened. He would have died.
Come out to LA, we'll have some laughs.
Yeah, see, he would have just been at the bottom of the shaft and
Okay, you're reading far too much into it.
It's not.
Physics has no place in a movie like Die Hard.
The dude dies. Anyway, aside from that, I'm saying good things. Okay,
I'm
saying good things about this
movie. Suspend your disbelief for a moment.
Those moments, every time I see them, I go, no way. Or I go, I don't believe that. But aside from that, something new happens every few minutes. The cutting and the editing, the pacing is pitch perfect. The bit of comedy mixed with seriousness at times is fantastic. Alan Rickman knocks it out of the park. Absolutely evil and materialistic and just every bit of that personality that's being wrapped up in the film. I just really, really love that. So the movie's a lot of fun to watch and just one of those great action movies. And quite possibly the situation in which we see the greatest Christmas card of all time. Which you know what that is. It's a dead body with a note written on it.
Now I have a machine gun.
Ho, ho, ho. That's a great Christmas card. Who doesn't want to get that? So, fun movie. apparently, members of our studio
listeners,
audience.
Please do not send Dustin Sells a dead body for Christmas.
I was about to say, you're saying this on the internet, not everyone gets sarcasm.
He is a family man. He has no use for a dead body.
But he's cool with a horse head
in his
bed.
Who said what?
Who said that?
Who said what?
Who said I've got no use for a dead body?
Do you have use for a dead body, sir?
Dear God.
I just... we're off the rails already.
That's how these things work.
10 minutes in, we were already flying off course.
So that's our quick vote up, vote down. Generally, it appears the reviews are positive. The thermometer would be more fresh, I think, than foul. So we move on now to a little bit of analysis. What is going on in this movie? I got a tweet this week from Arthur Gordon saying he was going to bring analysis
all
caps.
He's ready to bring the thunder.
So I'm ready to hear.
My body is ready.
Hear the thunder from Mr. Arthur Gordon.
Okay, we'll talk about how I read this film. And I essentially wrote like a page and a half paper over Die Hard.
I'm excited.
So I'll just kind of go through and read this. It's more of a reading, not really a lot of theoretical. The first thing I picked up on, the terrorists represent a physical manifestation of the turmoil of the McClane marriage. And these trials are bookended with the reception and the loss of Holly's Rolex.
Go ahead.
The Rolex, obviously, has to be stripped away from her, and it goes down with Mr. Severus Snape, Mr. Hans Gruber. I was like, okay, let me see this. And then the terrorists represent for Al, Carl Winslow, the fears that have been building since his accident. McLean represents the cop that Al wants to be. And in the defeat of the terrorist, Al's mental blockades fall, and he is able to do what McLean can't, and that's kill Carl, the German. Moving on, so I meditated on this a bit. And then I began reading this.
Apparently so.
McLean as the sacrificial lamb of Yom Kippur.
Huh.
Okay. Oh my God.
Yom Kippur.
Oh my Yahweh. I'm ready.
Yom Kippur is the Jewish Day of Atonement. McLean takes on the image of the pure animal by wearing white. His undershirt is white.
Yeah.
And when the terrorists arrive. As dusk arrives, McLean upholds the five prohibitions: fasting, leather shoes, perfume lotions, marital relations, and bathing. He partakes in none of these. He loses his shoes before the terrorists rise, and he has to run through this building without his shoes on.
When he tries
to take them, he does initially wash up, but it's before the terrorists arrive, before the sun falls.
Ceremonial cleaning.
McLean rinses himself clean before the terrorists arrive, or before dusk when the prohibitions go into effect. His arrival is also innocent in this film. He comes just to see his family and attend this party. There is nothing, more to be asked of him at this point. I'm quoting here, "A parallel has been drawn between the activities and the human condition. According to the biblical account of the expulsion from the garden, refraining from these symbolically represents a return to the pristine state. By refraining from these activities, the body is uncomfortable, but can still survive. By making one's body uncomfortable, one's soul is uncomfortable, and by feeling pain, one can feel how others feel when they are in pain."
Okay.
John McClane takes up the sins of his wife and of Al, their fears, their emotions, and possibly even his own pride and ego as being a rebellious cop. As the battle progresses, McClane's clothes and body grow dirtier and dirtier. McLean walks across glass, endures multiple lacerations, and is nearly broken completely. It is in these moments that the transgression moves from Holly and Al to McLean through the act of confession. They both confess their crimes and their sins to him. The biggest fight of the film takes place with Carl, the German. Carl may represent McLean's own stubborn nature and pride. Despite his best efforts, though, it keeps rising back up, and eventually McLean's white shirt becomes black. Before he eventually loses it. By the end of the film, McLean defeats Hans and thereby liberates Holly and Al, who are then able to liberate McLean when Al finds a true sacrifice in Carl, similar to Moses and Isaac, when God sends the sacrifice at the last moment.
Shazam!
That is a really...
Could I join the studio audience still?
Was that all you, or did you...
Yeah, that was all me.
You know a lot about Yom Kippur.
My research. I have a minor in Bible.
Man.
Okay, I thought he just pulled that out of somewhere that I can't say because it's a G-rated podcast. But
man, that was Arthur dropping bombs today, man. Woo.
I put more effort into this podcast than I have my papers this week.
Oh, nice.
So
that's good.
I was inspired by this film more than anything else I read.
Because it's a beautiful film.
Apparently.
Because
I didn't enjoy it. Weren't
inspired by silent era film to write a history paper? No.
Yeah.
Not me neither.
Moving on.
Mr. Harvey, would you have any analysis you'd like to bring?
Wow. Ask me on top of that one. Okay. Oh, goodness. What I remember most about this movie is the relationship between Al, that's the name of the cop, and on the ground talking to McLean.
Yes,
the wall.
Correct.
Okay. The name slipped my mind. I just remember their relationship, and he touched on it a little bit, how McLean is the cop that Al wants to be. And I got to thinking that for this, Al can represent the average American man, who, if we look at McLean as symbolizing the American values of courage and duty and stuff like that, he is the epitome of all those things. And Al is down there, he's watching from the sidelines. He cannot get in there because he's not allowed to. And it's this, like, voyeurism where Al is voyeuristically allowed to live his life through McClane in this awesome scene. So that's what I have.
Absolutely. I think there's absolutely a vicarious tone towards it. And I think it's exactly the thing that Arthur's picking up on as well. That is excellent analysis. Mr. Dalton Stewart, what have you, sir?
Phil actually touched on something I want to touch on a little deeper, and he's right.
We all seem to have consensus today.
Well, no, the living vicariously, I mean, that's kind of the touchstone of action film. It is a moment in time to live out that that power fantasy. And this film, there's actually a lot going on in this movie. I do want to touch on one thing briefly, is this kind of weird moment in time in terms of the masculine body, particularly John McClane, and how average he is. He's built like a cop. He's not the other action heroes of this time. John Rambo, the T-800, are bodybuilders. They are gigantic men.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Willis is not a huge man. He is in shape, but he is not overwhelmingly large. And, you know, you kind of see this valley, and it's kind of rebounded back to this getting our actors to look like bodybuilders if they're going to be in an action movie type thing. You hear all these stories about actors going to boot camp for a week because they're going to be in an army movie. But John McClane is the everyman. And that's what, at the end of the day, Die Hard is about, is American exceptionalism.
Okay.
John McClane is not smarter than the German terrorists.
By no means.
No. He is not as well-armed as they are.
By no means.
He is not as sophisticated as they are. And by extension, he's not as sophisticated or smart or as well-armed as another famous action icon, James Bond. John McClane is the anti-Bond. He is underprepared. He is out of his depth. He is physically incapable of handling the situation, and yet he triumphs time and time again through sheer tenacity, through sheer badassery, through sheer just being John McClane. By being America, Dustin.
I'm following you.
Yeah.
And it's another way to just say, ha-ha, Great Britain.
Well, in Germany, and, well, Alan
everyone else.
Well, everyone. Yeah.
Everyone. Because we're America. And so is John McClane. John McClane is America.
I just want to, like, see someone standing behind you with an American flag.
That's what I was picturing, was just some Pattons behind me, Mount Rushmore. I don't think I'm reaching too much.
I don't think
film
you are at all. I think it's exactly what it's about. Because I mean, it's Japanese invasion. We got Nakatomi Towers.
Exactly.
Invasion
well,
company that's
you,
bringing
exactly.
all of its hoity-toity culture.
You have colonialism coming back to bite America in the ass by they're being conquered by the Japanese and the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think I'm, you know.
You could have definitely been sure if this had been an American company, the Germans wouldn't have gotten in.
Because they wouldn't have relied on them crazy little machines that are really just toys
but
to play with.
And at the same time, it is a bounce back of the seedy parts of America, the less industrialism, imperialism, capitalism, these things that represent the darker sides of what has happened in the course of making America, have come back to bite it. This invasion, this takeover, this capitalism is, if anything, John McClane's enemy. He is stuck in this symbol of, you know, capitalist greed, Nakatomi Tower. And the Germans come, and I mean, I don't think I'm reaching too much in reading this. And John McClane embodies this idea of, yeah, we're not the best, but there's something special about us.
Right.
John McClane triumphs time and time again because he refuses to quit. And that's kind of ties into, again...
Because Goonies never say die.
Goonies never say die. That's right. John McClane is not
the 80s are just united by the theme Goonies never say die.
And that's, and John McClane kind of represents this idea of violence as masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
This performative masculinity. Al is emasculated through his inability to do violence and reclaims his manhood by doing violence that John McClane even wasn't capable of doing. We all take up arms behind John McClane in our desire to do violence and be violent and be the most violent and to squash the evil violence.
So
there's some fun stuff to chew on.
Excellent. Phil, you have a question?
No, I was just saying, so it kind of validates violence as a way of getting rid of all the bad things, too.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, this film is... I think it definitely takes a couple of beats to... It kind of lingers on the consequences of violence once or twice. I mean, I don't think this film glorifies violence entirely. Hold on. It glorifies it as a means. It doesn't
a means to an end.
Exactly. It doesn't glorify violence in and of itself. I mean, there's definitely there are beats to.
He puts a dead body in an elevator with a note on it.
Hold on,
Justin. One step forward is still one step forward, as somebody taught me today.
Well, okay.
That's a bad guy. He doesn't count.
There are people.
Hold on.
There are people.
I'm following the logic of the film.
All right.
Go with me. But Nakatomi dies. Nakatomi is an innocent man who stood up for what he believed in, and it lingers on that death.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a moment to look at that.
But we
death.
Just talked about the dehumanization of Ellis, executed in a similar fashion.
Ellis died for his folly.
He also
Ellis
died off-screen.
And he died because Nakatomi died because he stood for what he believed in. Ellis died because he was a coward.
And also trying to capitalize on the situation.
Exactly.
And I think there's some symmetry between those two deaths.
You think? Well, no. They're both executed by Hans Gruber. No question.
And I think the fundamental dehumanization is part of what's going on in that film.
Well, pick up that ball and run with it, man. What do you got to say?
I want to do this too.
Segway.
Well, first thing I would want to say is that what we have in Die Hard is. You know, he is definitely being cast in that Roy Rogers role, in that performative role of establishing what male American masculinity is supposed
Absolutely.
To look like. And the movies do this. I am a member of a family in which there is a member of my family who has absolutely patterned his wife after John Wayne. It's crazy. He even sounds like it. And it's because he's seen...
What's interesting is John Wayne didn't sound like that.
Well, right. But that's his movie voice.
Well,
and
at least he won't shoot a man in the back.
No, he won't do that. But he
John McClane will.
He will shoot a man. So what masculinity in Hollywood does is it tells us what we are supposed to look like, what our manhood is supposed to be.
Oh, no, absolutely. It holds up the cultural norms and values of the era.
It does. And what McClane does is I think it's a little problematic in that he is an absolute child in his relationships with Holly. He cannot begin a conversation without picking up an old fight. And, you know, and he's chiding himself afterward about having gone into this issue about her not carrying on his name. But that all said, it's masculinity that is being performed for us so that we would know how to imitate said masculinity. And the way it's achieved through the movie, I think, is primarily through the body of John McClane, Bruce Willis, being placed on display. It's a reversal of the typical gaze, which is typically a man's gaze upon a woman. We're now examining the gaze upon the body of a man in a heterosexual kind of way. And it's actually commented on because we have two instances when he initially escapes the terrorist takeover, and he looks across the street, and there's a woman naked in the building.
Yes.
Across the way.
Yes.
And also when he's upstairs after having escaped from the elevator shaft, there's a pinup girl.
I love any girls. And just gives it a loving tap as he runs by. A funny sound effect cues. Yeah.
Which is really kind of amusing stuff, but it's also talking about we're not doing that kind of movie. We're doing the movie where we're going to look at this body of this person who's going to be the substitute for us. And not only that, the person sought to be imitated. You know, we've already talked about this kind of vicarious atonement thing that's going on, and that McClane becomes the object of the desires of Holly and Al. But also there's this idea that his body is being punished in kind of this heroic trope where he is being punished in a way so that he can arise as the ultimate icon, that he is actually
so
becoming the man that we want to be, but he has to do
through
it through punishment.
Well, he must persevere because he lacks other skills.
So his body is punished, and that's what we view. We view the symbolic wound through a shoulder, which is in movies, that's a symbolic wound always.
Oh, yeah.
Because shoulder wounds, you don't use that arm anymore. I digress. Also,
but in movies, that just means, oh man, look how tough he is.
Walking over broken glass, again.
That's a brutal scene. That is definitely a moment.
Our studio audience does not like the term brutal scene.
Well, I mean,
it's pretty awful.
It's painful. It's wince-inducing.
But the point of it all is that he suffers, and he suffers in such a way and bears all of that, continues to bear what comes upon him, and does his duty and kills the baddies. And all of that is constituting what it means for us now to be men, as men who are the primary intended audience, I think, of this film, it's safe to say.
My mother loves this film.
Sure, but I still say we're the intended audience.
No, I absolutely
agree. Giving us this sort of
there's not necessarily that we are... very many good feminine role models in this movie. They're either damsels in distress. Or...
Well, to be fair, Holly represents. I mean, kind of this taking back of she's the breadwinner. She makes a lot more money than John does, and he has a hard time dealing with that.
And the movie at the end fundamentally de-womanizes her and makes her into a child needing McClane's redemption. She's just there in a corner with a coat on. And Johnny's going to have to save the day.
Really? I mean, because she does totally punch. She mama bears at the end, man.
Well, she mama bears and punches a wimpy, nerdy reporter, the jerk guy from Ghostbusters. I mean, who else could punch that guy? I mean, that's...
This man has no dick! Sorry.
So
it's almost like a punishment for the... In going with the... it's like eliciting a masculine fear. The woman is making more money than you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have that.
And emasculating John. So John reasserts his masculinity and puts that woman back in her place, which I find to be a little problematic.
Very problematic, ladies. Please don't send us angry comments.
I think that's a stretch. I think that's a valid reading. I think it's a bit of a stretch. I think enough of that is there that I don't think you're out of line for reading it that way, but I do think that's a bit of a stretch.
And again, it's just it's that whole narrative of redemptive
violence
in film throughout, and which is troublesome of itself to me. But that all said, is it a fun film? Is it entertaining? Absolutely. But what's going on is that we see this man being manhood for us. One writer talked about, and I shudder to even bring this up, but that there is this kind of phallic place that these men have for us. And that John McClane is kind of a phallus with muscles. That's what he is for us. And as he grows older, Bruce Willis looks more and more.
doesn't help that he's bald.
That's zing.
So
zing.
I think perhaps that author was onto something in that analysis.
Speaking of that, you know, you could look at the gun as a very phallic symbol. And,
obviously.
You know, he makes a specific point of saying, ha ha, now I have a gun.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm coming to get you.
Right. And again, and the redemption of manhood for Al is the being able to draw his gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't think
that's
a far leap.
Absolutely. That's a very clear message at the end of Al reclaims his masculinity by killing the bad guy.
So hence my issue is, you're not a man by killing people.
No, definitely not.
And that is really part of the reading of the film, and by making sure that you're a man and the women are women. And it's just no good in that regard. So there's, I think it's probably problematic as a film as far
ideology.
As ideology goes. All right, well, let's do our final segment of the analysis, the movie of the week section of the show, which is the shelf or trash question. And we're going to ask, should you put it on the shelf or on the trash? And if on the shelf, what else? Or in the trash, what instead? I begin to my right, Mr. Dalton Stewart. Shelf or trash, else or instead?
Believe it or not, I'm not going to say put it on the shelf.
What?
Don't throw it in the trash. Please don't. Please don't throw it in the trash. But if you don't already have this...
If you love America, don't throw it in the trash.
Exactly. But if you don't already have this film, it's okay. You don't need to own it. Because this film is best watched years and years and years apart.
At Christmas.
It's best watched at every third or fourth Christmas. I really think so. And somebody owns it, and it's on television all the time. It is a fun film, and again, as I've said, I think it is probably one of the most perfect action films ever made in America, but you don't need to own it.
Else or instead.
You're right, else or instead. obviously, I do like this film, and if you like this film, I highly recommend checking out The Raid Redemption. It is the younger Indonesian cousin of Die Hard. It came out earlier this year, a very similar setup. Good cop in the wrong place at the wrong time, stuck in a building full of bad guys, and he must do violence to escape. A very fun film. I would say a nearly technically perfect film. I mean, the musically, the fight choreography, the camera work from Gareth Evans, I believe is the director's name of this film. Feel badly for not knowing off the top of my head. But really, just a fantastic film. I highly recommend it.
Excellent. Mr. Arthur Gordon, shelf or trash, else or instead?
I went out and put this movie on my shelf specifically for this podcast, and I regret nothing. it's $5 at Walmart. It's, you know, it's worth picking up if you don't have it, or you're a big action fan, you haven't seen it. go along with it, I'm going to throw out RoboCop and Total Recall.
Absolutely.
To kind of watch there.
Well,
little
no, you have to
movie marathon
Total Recall now. Do you mean the 80s?
The original.
Okay.
The original.
RoboCop is another one of those damaged bodies in our place kind of film.
Excellent. That's a film full of juicy satire.
So, those are my choices.
Excellent. Mr. Philip Harvey. Shell for Trash, Else or Instead?
I'm going to agree with Dalton over here and say, watch it on TV. But for God's sakes, don't get rid of it. However, the movies I would recommend to go along with this movie... Oh, no hand motions. Would be an old movie by Akira Kurosawa called Yojimbo.
Well played.
Which has the same motives of using violence to overcome the greed of capitalism. And another movie, the other movie, is Constantine. Which, not necessarily about a cop, but it has a lot of the same action tropes in there.
Okay.
That's a fun film.
It's a fun movie.
I enjoy Constantine. It's a
good flick. That might be good trash.
That might be good trash.
I'm just saying. I'm going to say, go ahead and put it on the shelf. And the reason why is because I happen to be aware of a special edition that has a cut your scene section in it where you're able to do some montage work with the action in the film.
Awesome.
And the funness of that is worth it every bit. And again, that's what makes this movie is technically perfect. Something different happens every 8 minutes in this movie. Some new character is introduced, some new complications introduced, and it continually engrosses you as a film. And so just for absolutely brilliant technical filmmaking, the movie's worth having and owning.
Well,
but
it definitely succeeds where some other action films fail. It's got stakes, man.
Now, as far as whether I want to say that you should watch Else for Instead, I'm kind of ambivalent, but I'll say another movie, a different movie to watch, it is a movie called Ozark Balthazar. And I don't believe I've had the chance to talk about that movie on the show.
You're referring to the... oh, God.
Bresson?
Thank you. You are referring to Luc Besson film.
Mm-hmm, I am.
About the donkey.
About the donkey. About the donkey who takes all the violence upon himself and never returns any of it and is still heroic. And I think there is there's something very contrasting that's working there. It's probably one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen in my life.
To our less well-read listeners,
please inform me.
You're gonna want to skip out on this one.
No!
Hold on.
Have you seen this movie?
I'm just letting our less well-read listeners who don't want to broaden their horizons know.
Oh,
this is not an action film. This is a mood piece. It's a highly acclaimed film, widely regarded as one of the best films ever made. But if you're looking to, deepen your knowledge of film, this is one that's actually been on my list to check out for quite some time. So,
it's very different, but I think it would be an excellent double
bill.
What's
the word I'm looking for? Unconventional. That was a very unconventional pick, Dustin, but I think a good one.
I think it'd be a really fun double bill to look at, and it is, again, one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen, ever. It's available on Hulu Plus if you happen to have that subscription, because it is a Criterion release. And there's probably some free versions out and about on the interwebs. But it was a lot of fun. It's a movie I like a lot. All right, gang. Well, thank you so much for all of those suggestions and analysis. Let's move on to the next part of our show, which is when we play our game. And since we are looking at one of the great action movie icons, Mr. John McClane, we are going to select our favorite action film icon and why. I begin to my left, Mr. Arthur Gordon. What do you say?
I've got a couple here. The first, I've just got to say, it's the T-800. It's Arnold.
Dun, 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 dun.
It's Terminator. Dun, dun, dun. For me growing up, I loved that movie, both of those movies as a kid. And so there's just a sentimental place in my heart for it. And I'm also going to, I'm going to say Indiana Jones.
Oh, okay.
Harrison Ford. There's just something about Indy that I love.
Well, as far as iconic goes, I mean, that's the only character I know where you can just show the silhouette and you know who it is.
That hat and that whip.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So going with that and a little fun trivia about myself, the Raiders March was played at my wedding when we left the sanctuary.
Aww.
So it has a special place in my heart.
Well played.
Cute.
Mr. Philip Harvey, favorite action icon, and why?
Clint Eastwood. Hands down, without a doubt. Representing those masculine values that America loves. And also, he holds a special place in my heart because my mom and I would always watch Clint. We would go watch Dirty Harry marathons.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Dirty Harry specifically.
Dirty Harry specifically, but I love Clint Eastwood more specifically for the Fistful of Dollars trilogy.
Yeah! That was that narrowly got nudged out of my list, so I'm really glad you called that one out, Phil.
Hey, that is my favorite movie of all time. I imagine
you're to come up with something else. Go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say, he can go now. I have said my piece.
Mr. Dalton Stewart, favorite action icon and why?
I actually split this up. I want to give out an award to the ladies and the fellas.
Oh, do you? Oh,
I do. Because I think part of required viewing for this, required companion viewings for this film are Alien and Aliens.
Dang it. I was just going to say, I have an addendum. So Ripley.
And Terminator and Terminator 2. Mm-hmm. You can skip all others from that point forward. Well, I might actually revisit that statement at a later date. But as part of this late 80s action films, when I think of greatest action films ever made, it's Die Hard, Terminator 2, and Aliens. These are just ridiculously exciting, entertaining, and suspenseful films that should not be missed. I mean, really, if you haven't picked these up, believe the hype. They're good. And Sarah Connor and Ellen Ripley are just... they're action icons in every right, just as much as Clint Eastwood or Bruce Willis. So I definitely felt the need to give a shout-out to the female action heroes that definitely exist out there. For male action icon, it's John McClane. Honestly, in terms of watching Die Hard films, you're good with 1 and 3. 2 is very skippable, and 4 isn't completely atrocious, but I don't think it's a Die Hard film. It's a serviceable action film, but it misses the point on what Die Hard's all about. John McClane, and specifically Bruce Willis, he's a good actor. He really is. He's definitely narrow. He's limited range, but he's fun to watch. He's got screen presence like no other, and he does all of these very macho films with a wink and a smile. I don't think he takes the characters he plays too seriously. And John McClane's just a fun character. He really is. I can see why, despite the quality of sequels and paychecks, why he keeps revisiting this franchise. Again, other than paychecks. And I remain cautiously optimistic about A Good Day to Die Hard.
It looks fun.
I don't think they'll steer us terribly wrong, no.
No. I mean, Live Free or Die Hard was pretty forgettable. So I don't think it could get much worse, although I've been known to have to eat my words in the past. But anyway, the King of the Hill, in terms of action icons, has always and will forever be John McClane and Bruce Willis.
Well done. I would have to say, you know, I was initially my answer was going to be, and that I was going to say the man with no name. Because there's somebody who can come in who can take care of the baddies, who can do all that stuff, who can do it in your place that you can't do it. And the fact of the matter is you can put your name in the place. That's why he's got no name. It's all about identification.
Absolutely.
And I think that's pretty awesome. But my honorable mention, we'll go ahead and move up into first place because it is one of those characters that I really do love. I want to name Brandon Lee's The Crow as an excellent icon of action and just a fantastic movie. I'm not a big fan of the revenge film, the Punisher kind of character, but something about that movie keeps bringing me back. And it's just one of my all-time favorites, and I just love that movie.
It's a really beautiful film.
It's just not a good day to be a bad guy.
No.
And so I like that movie.
Ran all the time.
And it's a really, really iconic sort of character. Oh. You know exactly who you're talking about when you see him. And so I would say Brandon Lee's The Crow.
Excellent answer.
All right, well, let's move on to what we do every week, the only consistent part of this show.
Literally the only consistent part of the show.
Which is, what's got us fired up this week in pop culture? I ask you, Mr. Dalton Stewart, are you fired up?
Yeah, I'm pretty fired up. Nothing exceptional happening this week in particular, so I went and revisited some things. I got about halfway through the much-loved but short-lived television series Freaks and Geeks earlier this year, and I went ahead and continued watching this series. It's really good. It's a good show. I don't know if you guys have checked this out. Created by Paul Feig and run by Paul Feig and Judd Apatow. It's a high school dramedy set in the 1980s. It is a very, very good television series. I highly recommend everyone check it out. A lot of familiar faces who would go on to big stardom, like Jason Segel and James Franco, Seth Rogen, John Francis Daly, Sam Levine. A lot of people who have gone on to have pretty solid careers starting this series. I highly recommend checking out. As part of getting caught up, we're nearing the end of the year, obviously, trying to catch up with the critically acclaimed films that have been released. I checked out a film called The Deep Blue Sea by Terrence Davies, starring Rich Weisz and Tom Hiddleston. This is a good movie. It's a good movie.
Not the one about sharks.
No, not about mutant sharks.
With LL Cool J.
With LL Cool J and not Samuel L. Jackson and Thomas Jane, although that's a fantastic film in its own right.
Or not. Go ahead.
That's its own separate kind of
I think
good
the charge. Article is the difference, right?
The Deep Blue Sea. Whereas the shark film is just Deep Blue Sea. The Deep Blue Sea is a film about infidelity set in 1950s London. And it is a very interesting film, very beautifully shot film, a very emotionally poignant film, with a lot of things going on. I don't want to talk too much about it. It's definitely one. I didn't know a whole lot about this film going in. I knew the gist of it. And I think you're better served by knowing as little as possible. But it's definitely an enjoyable film. It's just over 90 minutes. I mean, it's a quick watch.
Is it on Netflix?
It is streaming currently on Netflix.
I am familiar with it. I haven't got a chance to see it, but I thought I saw it on there.
It's very good. I highly recommend it. And it was just a really touching film, and not in a sappy kind of way, not in a saccharine way by any means. If anything, it was the exact opposite of that. But definitely check it out.
Excellent, sir. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what's got you fired up this week?
First, I'll just kind of go back to Dalton. I don't know if you're familiar, but Undeclared. I don't know if you've seen
it. It's kind of the
spiritual follow-up to Freaks and
it's
Geeks.
It's also streaming currently, isn't it?
Yes, and there's only one season. Yeah. I think Freaks and Geeks is similar to one season.
Yes, so one season.
You can knock them out in a couple weeks, probably, if you're that kind of person.
I'm going to give it a shot.
It's Undeclared's fun.
Okay.
But a couple things. Obviously, the Disney-Netflix agreement has got me fired up.
There is good trash genre cast potential there.
Because we're about to get the entire Disney canon on Netflix.
Really?
Animated. You can already catch Dumbo, Alice,
whoa,
Nightmare Before Christmas on there.
So
ABC Family
a
stuff.
A lot of racism and sexism is what you're telling me.
Yeah. All the good stuff. So yeah, that, and I think in 2013 a lot of the catalogs are becoming available.
If I only waited a couple more years, I would have wasted so much money.
All those platinum edition DVDs are kind of embarrassing.
That really screws up their vault business model, though.
It may. Release them limited. You know, they may still have that kind of
smart business problem.
But,
business problem, business model.
It's also kind of scary on the Disney monopoly of entertainment.
It's a bit more.
But I'm excited about this
partnership. I'm glad to see them pick that up, because they've been losing a lot of partnerships pretty frequently of late.
I know there's some initial confusion. I know some Disney stuff was on there originally, and I think there's some contract stuff, and they took it off, but now they have reached some sort of agreement, so that's exciting. Also, I got an email yesterday informing that I've been invited to a press screening of Zero Dark Thirty, and I'm getting more and more excited about this film as I keep seeing trailers and ads and info about it. Jessica Chastain in the lead.
It won Best Picture for the Critics' Choice Award already.
New York Critics, and another one. It won another.
And featuring Chris Pratt of the television series Parks and Recreation, which I just love that he keeps showing up in these big Oscar-baity films like Moneyball, and a predominantly comedic actor showing up in these big
dramas.
These big Oscar bait dramas, yeah.
So I'm excited to go see Zero Dark Thirty and see if it's living up to the hype.
Definitely looking forward to that.
It would be very interesting to see Catherine Bigelow repeat and get another Best Picture and Directing Award. Mm. I think that could be.
Did she pick up Best Director as well? That's right.
Cameron.
She did.
She beat out the X.
Yeah, he did.
So that's got me fired up this week.
Outstanding. Mr. Philip Harvey, what's got you fired up this week in pop culture?
I am always so far behind in pop culture, so I am currently reading George R.R. Martin's Game of Thrones book. I just finished the third book. I believe it is called A Storm of Swords.
That's a good TV show.
That sounds like that would be awful to happen. A storm of swords?
Yes, it is awful. Because,
man.
Not to say too much, but there is so much killing and horrible things happening in those books that it makes me feel vicariously bad for the people that I keep reading.
Nice. I haven't read the book series, but I am a big fan of the HBO television show.
It is. I would say my personal opinion is that the HBO television show beats it.
Really?
Because there are some unrealistic factors in the book, such as, this is just a personal thing of mine, but every noble house has like a million, billion pieces of gold, finery, and exquisite pieces of armor lying around. So it's like the rich are extremely rich, and the poor are extremely poor. There's no in-between.
Kind of like now.
Yeah, exactly. And so if that's a social commentary, he's very subtle about it, I assure you. And the thing is, the television show, I believe, brings a level of realness to it that the book does not have, because while the book, some people say it's a critique on the genre of high fantasy, because if something gets good, it gets twice as bad before anything else happens.
Oh man, it gets awful.
It does.
I like to describe it as the West Wing meets Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, actually, with dragons.
Yeah, you know, that's fun stuff.
And the...
I like dragons.
And that is... Oh, and I'm also fired up about The Walking Dead.
Season 3's been really good.
It has been. It's like The Night of Living Dead in that it turns the zombies into background characters and makes the humans the scary people.
Absolutely.
And that is what good horror always used to do. I know this is an action episode, but horror has a place in every conversation.
Absolutely. Well played, sir. What's got me fired up this week in pop culture? I've got about three things. First of all, one of them is that per the recommendation of Ms. Ashley Raines last week, in which you should always obey, and so I took my own medicine. I went and saw The Life of Pi.
And?
It's good. I saw it in 3D, and dear listener, it's not making a whole lot of money. It won't be available really long. I don't know what opportunities you may or may not have to catch this movie in 3D, but DVD will not be the same. Catch it in 3D if you can. If you are interested in survival stories, if you're interested in spiritual questions, if you're interested in beautiful cinematography, this is your ticket. And catch it 3D. I will say it. It is the best 3D film I've ever seen. Best film 3D ever. And you heard it here first, guys. So check it out. It's definitely worth seeing. Moving on down, one of the things that got me fired up is that I heard a recommendation of the movie Seven Psychopaths this last week.
I'm pretty sure I recommended that to you like 2 months ago.
I read a review, and I wasn't sure. I knew I wanted to see it, but now I really want to see it. And the argument is made that it's better than Pulp Fiction, and there are reasons. And so I want to see that for that reason of itself.
That's incorrect. But they definitely make a really interesting, they make interesting companion pieces.
So I want to see what's going on with all of that and check it out. Then I have just two other small pop culture things. One thing I'm fired up about because of how much I don't care. It was recently announced today that Angelina Jolie is probably giving up her acting career for the sake of her children. Well, to which I say...
She has an acting career?
Huh?
She has an acting career?
I don't know. I was sleeping.
I'm kidding. Girl Interrupted's a decent film.
That's a Winona Ryder movie. Moving on.
God, I love Winona Ryder so much.
There is one other thing I'm fired up about in pop culture, and that is the canceling of Dirty Jobs. Just sad all over. I love me some Micro.
Micro's a good guy.
I love
How?
Me some Dirty Jobs.
Why? This is obscene.
I know.
Has he completed all the jobs? Is that the reason?
I think he might be out of jobs.
Well, you know, every episode ends with, if you don't call in, if you don't
We're
going to
get canceled.
We're going to get canceled. You know what happened? We didn't call in. You know what might happen, dear listener? If you don't give us feedback, we're going to think this is worthless, and this may be canceled as well.
I knew there was a brilliant segue coming up.
It's a good segue.
Please, dear listener,
any of you who
connect.
Know me personally know how desperately I need affirmation, so please.
Someone to stroke his ego. Listen to this podcast.
Connect
dear
with
God,
us
please.
On social media. Tell us why we're right. Tell us why we're wrong. Engage in the conversation. I promise, you tweet me, I will tweet you back. And we will talk and talk about these things. And also, you can follow all things film at The Good Trash GenreCast. So, how do we do that? We do that through various means of social media. One of them is the Tumblr. You can follow us at http://goodtrashgenrecast.tumblr.com. Also, we can be found at Facebook. Arthur, tell us where that's at.
You can find us at www.facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast. One word. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. There's also one other bit of media. There's one other medium within the media that make up social media. Dalton, do you know what that is?
Huh? There's another one? Are you talking about the Twitter?
These newfangled inventions for these kids.
That is right, dear listener. You can find and follow the Good Trash GenreCast on Twitter. @good_trash, and I didn't say www, because that's significantly more syllables than World Wide Web. How did that happen? How have we allowed this to go on for the last 25 years?
I refer to it as TripDub.
TripDub!
This is a film podcast, man. Don't ask linguistic
Arthur,
questions.
I think we just both required ourselves to put money in the douchebag jar.
Okay.
By saying TripDub. You can tell a lot about a person by the way they say.
I'm gonna
no
go get my. I'm gonna put my North Face jacket on and go jump in my Hummer, and I'll see y'all downtown.
I'll meet you at B Dubs.
Okay, let's do it. Over wings.
I love you so much.
Let's do it. That's a Blue Moon beer with a slice of orange.
Oh my god. Hey, are we on Twitter?
Yeah, I already said it. I already told you.
Oh, did you say it?
I got everything.
That ship sank a long time ago, my friend.
Wow. We also can be followed individually on social media. I'm on Twitter at Dustin_Sells. Dalton, where are you at?
I am on the Twitter at Dalton Stewart, Stuart.
Mr. Arthur Gordon, where can you be found?
You can find me at Twitter at RNDTBLReview.
And finally, guest host Philip Harvey, where are you at?
I'm on Twitter at PhilAwesomeR.
Nicely done. Spell it out for us.
It's Phil, P-H-I-L, awesome, tack an R on the end.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you can follow us. The conversation can keep on going because that's really what it's about. We're going to look at the Hebrew Hammer because it's Hanukkah, and that's going to be happening.
Dreidel, dreidel, dreidel.
Really? I haven't seen this movie, so I have no idea. But
I think that song kind of exceeds that movie.
I think that song is from a Jeff Dunham
piece. Oh, that song is significantly older than that film. I just wanted to sing it because it's Hanukkah.
And so we will be celebrating the Hanukkah with all of those hard H's.
Why is we got to do this the next week, huh?
Do you ever offend yourself?
Daily.
That is a champion among men.
Dear listener, you have the opportunity to check it out ahead of time, and in the meantime, be sure and see all the good trash that's out there, because there's a whole lot of good trash. Movies are so rarely great art, and if we can't appreciate the good trash, what are we bothering with it for in the first place? We'll see you next time.
What? 99% of the time, what?
99% of the time, I can't remember exactly what it was.
We're talking about how lucky John McClane is.
Yeah, and it's about how lucky we are to be alive, and how we took that concept subconsciously and put it into the action hero. He gets lucky, but technically we're all getting lucky too. And so
all his scrapes.
It's
death.
Because of the alternate universe theory. Each choice you make has 10 other chances on what will happen. And out of 9 of the 10 universes, you're going to die. But in one, you're going to live every time. And so.
Can I go into one of the alternate universes where I'm not on this stinking podcast?
You'll be dead. Yeah.
So fair trade.
And so it explains why.
Somebody's
getting
cut.
The action hero always lives because you're only aware of the universe that you're in, and since he's getting all these lucky shots, it's actually possible through physics or something. Yeah, it's very...
That's interesting. Yeah. We're seeing the universe in the completely unlikely universe where John McClane managed to survive. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
It's like how a video game hero somehow manages to survive every bolt that is thrown at him.
I think both of you, most everybody at this podcast would enjoy the article.
I love Cracked, so I'll check it out.
I don't remember.
Cracked.
Cracked.com.
Fantastic.
The Great Philosophy magazine.
Pop culture and comedy.
5 important life lessons or something like that from movies you were getting.
Nice.
Oh, was that the one you shared on her?
Yeah.
Hey, we learn all our life lessons from movies. Yeah. So okay, that's the point, isn't it?
That's how we learn how to be people from movies.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.